Welcome to the show. This is Jane Hoffman, and we're going to be studying Ezekiel 1 tonight. John will be joining us shortly, hopefully soon. Now it came to pass in the 30th year, in the fourth month, in the fifth day, as I was among the captives by the river of Shabar, that the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. What I'm going to do is I'm going to play one more song because I don't want John to miss the beginning. So let's play this song. Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
I see John in the house. I'm going to read a couple lines of Ezekiel 1, and then I'll bring him in. Now it came to pass in the 13th year, in the fourth month, in the fifth day, as I was among the captives by the river of Shebar, that the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. In the fifth day of the month, which was the fifth year of King Jehoiachin's captivity, his name is spelled Jehoiachins, Jehoiachin's. The word of the Lord came expressly unto Ezekiel the priest, the son of Buzu, in the land of the Chaldeans by the river Shebar. And the hand of the Lord was there upon him. And I looked, and behold, a whirlwind came out of the north, a great cloud, and a fire unfolding itself, and a brightness was about it, and out of the mist thereof was the color of amber, out of the mist of fire. And out of the mist there came the likeness of four living creatures. And this was their appearance, that they had the likeness of a man. And every one had four faces, and every one had four wings. And their feet were straight feet, and the sole of their feet was the sole of a calf's foot. And they sparkled like the color of burnished brass. And they had the hands of a man under the wing of their four sides, and they had four, and they four had their faces and their wings. Their wings were joined one to another. They turned not when they went, and they went every one straight forward. As for the likeness of their faces, they four had the face of a man and the face of a lion on the right side, and they four had the face of an ox on the left side. They four also had the face of an eagle. Apparently, they had four sides with four different animals. Thus were their faces, and their wings were stretched upward. Two wings on every one were joined one to another, and two covered their bodies. And they went every one straight forward, whither the spirit was to go they went, and they turned not when they went. As for the likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like burning coals of fire, and like the appearance of lamps, and went up and down among the living creatures, and the fire was bright, and out of the fire went forth lightning. And the living creatures ran and returned as the appearance of a flash of lightning. Now as I behold the living creatures, behold one wheel upon the earth by the living creatures with his four faces. The appearance of the wheels and their work was like unto the color of beryl, and their four had one likeness, and their appearance and their work was as it were a wheel in the middle of a wheel. When they went upon their four sides, and they turned not when they went. As for their rings, they were so high that they were dreadful, and their rings were full of eyes, round about them four. And when, I'm going to stop in about two sentences, and when the living creatures went, the wheels went by them, and when the living creatures were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up. Whither so the spirit was to go, they went. Thither was their spirit to go, and the wheels were lifted up over against them, for the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. When those went, these went, and when those stood, these stood, and when those lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up over against them, for the spirit of the living creature was in the wheels. And the likeness of the firmament upon the heads of the living creature was the color of a terrible crystal stretched forth over their heads. And the firmament were their wings straight, the one towards the other, every one had two, which covered on this side, and every one had two, which covered on the side their bodies. And when they went, I heard the noise of their wings, like the noise of great waters, as the voice of the Almighty, the voice of speech, and the voice as a host. When they stood, they let down their wings. I'm going to stop there because there's a lot to cover. Hi, John.
Greetings.
Sorry to make
Janessa.
You wait so long.
Oh, that's all right.
Well, I picked a tough chapter. Are you in a place where
yes,
you can talk
do.
For a while?
For a little bit.
Good. There are some current events today I want to discuss, but I have a clip from Arnold Schwarzenegger, but let's cover the Bible commentary first on this. If you were just
Excellent.
To listen to that without any Bible examination, would you think that the four animal spirits they're talking about is the industrial progress of mankind?
I would have thought whoever wrote that is on some kind of medication or is experimenting in ecstasy or hallucinogenic drugs without knowing the passage. And someone just started reading it. But knowing the history of biblical prophets in the Old Testament, such as Isaiah and Ezekiel and some of the other ones, that it's the things that they said over the years have come true and historically just have been so accurate. And the test of a prophet in their time was if they were wrong, they were to be taken out and stoned to death. So you the ones that survived were good to their word. And it does seem a little bit like a metaphor or a visualization of some future mechanical technology, for sure. Sure,
I did
like
find
it.
One reference would make more sense. First of all, the name I had trouble pronouncing, Jehoiakim, he was the father of Jehoiachin, the first carrying away the Jewish captives to Babylon in that period, and among them was Daniel. The second was Jehoiachin when Ezekiel was carried away. The third and final captivity was taking of Jerusalem under Zedekiah. So let me just read this thing quick. Not only were there four distinct creatures, but each of the four had four faces, making 16 in all. The four creatures of the cherubim answered by contrast to the four world monarchies, represented by four beasts, which includes Assyria, Persia, Greece, and Rome. And that was, the reference was Daniel 7. The fathers identified these four faces as the four gospels: Matthew the lion, Mark the ox, Luke the man, and John the eagle. Two cherubim only stood above the ark in the temple. Two more are now added to imply that, while the law is retained as the basis, a new form is needed to be added to impart new life. The number four may have respect to the four quarters of the world, to imply that God's angels execute his commands everywhere. Every head in front had the face of a man as the primary and prominent one. On the right, the face of a lion. On the left, the face of an ox. And behind, the face of eagle. The mosaic cherubim were similar, only the human faces were looking forward towards the mercy seat being formed out of the mass of pure gold. Well, I thought, I have heard that reference before, that the four powers of the world will descend on Jerusalem someday. Russia, China, the U.S., and I guess Europe would be the fourth one.
It is so interesting that during those, over the years, there's been many other religions and other people who have had visions and forecast things. And most of these groups or cultures are gone, as far as I'm speaking from a religious point of practice. And here you have the Jewish culture, which to this day stands strong to this moment, still surrounded by adversity. It was interesting because there's a few websites out there. One of them is hosted by African American male who he's very angry because he wants reparations. And he kind of just talked about how no one can compare to the African Americans, you know, the adversity that they suffered in this country. And without any biblical history, I would just go, oh, you're right, we better get our wallets out here and start handing out some money. And then I just started thinking of the plight of Jews throughout the years. And we're talking genocide. We're not just talking Nazi Germany, Hitler. We're talking Egypt. We're talking in Babylon. We're talking in Rome. And when Herod was angry, the three wise men hadn't come back to him to report about baby Jesus. He made sure that all the males under 2 years old were killed in that city. So you're talking, you know, just some brutal history, more than just slavery. I mean, slavery, yes, but beyond that, genocide. And that's just incredible, the survival of Israel and of the Jewish people. It's incredible.
Yeah, another prophecy is there will be, this is not necessarily related to this chapter, but there will be four persecutions of Zion. And several are the ones that you mentioned, Egypt, Babylon, the European genocide of the Jews, and the fourth one hasn't taken place yet. And that will be the one that will return Christ to the earth.
Well, it's interesting that in Israel, they haven't had any prophets, as far as I understand, for a couple thousand years. Now, they do have the Torah, and they have
Bob Dylan.
They have Bob Dylan. Who I guess is a hybrid, because he defected. You know, he did go Christian for a while. It's like the joke where they asked a God was talking to a Jewish rabbi, and the rabbi was distressed. And he said, "What's the matter?" He said, "Well, my son went to America and became a Christian," and he said, "Yep, mine too." You know, there's this kind of thing where the culture, it's interesting. They have Kabbalah, which is kind of a Jewish mysticism. And it's basically oral traditions handed down. In other words, they believe that they do have the law, and they do have all the various subgroupings of the law, all these different commandments. And besides the Ten Commandments, they have like hundreds, you know, like when to wash your hands. And they took these to other levels. Like example, let's say there's the commandment not to work on the Sabbath. Well, they've interpreted it as so far as anything making fire or spark is work. And then they interpret to this day, like if you're going to get in an elevator on the Sabbath, hit the button, and that sparks electricity, that's work. And I remember going to a Shabbat dinner on the Sabbath with a friend. They kind of smuggled me in, being a Gentile. And it was in Venice. We met at his church. There was a little temple congregation meeting off of the Venice boardwalk. You wouldn't even know it. You're walking along and suddenly, woof, there it is. And we went to the service, and afterwards we went to a house. And we were, I dressed in suit and tie. I was trying to be respectful, you know, not like stand out too much. And they put a little yarmulke on my head as a covering. And like if you don't have one, you come in, they got little like guest yarmulkes you can put on. And the women were on the left side, the men on the right, with a separation down the middle. A partition. And after service, we went to this house. It was Michael Medved, the radio conservative commentary guy. And he does movie reviews and things like that. And he always usually tries to have a conservative viewpoint. We went to his house, and it was a few blocks away. We had to walk uphill. And the point was, we couldn't take a car because starting the car ignition would create a spark, and that was considered work. So we were walking uphill in like 90 degree heat, and I'm sitting there thinking, you talk about work, we are working here, you know, but we couldn't take a car because that was considered working. So, you know, it just shows you how they have all these different rules and things going on in their culture. It's incredibly crazy.
I was going to read something quick. I did find something on the Ezekiel commentary about the wheel, but I want to read that second. In 300 years ago, King Louis XIV of France asked Mr. Pascal, the great Christian philosopher, to give him proof of God. Pascal answered, "Why the Jews, Your Majesty, the Jews." That the Jewish nation, such a tiny group of people, survived 2,000 years of exile and persecution was nothing short of a supernatural phenomenon. Pascal wasn't the only one amazed with the survival of the Jews. Mark Twain wrote in Harper's Magazine in 1899, "The Egyptian, Babylon, and Persians rose, filled the planet with sound and splendor, then faded off to dream stuff and passed away. The Greek and Romans followed, made a vast noise, and then they are gone. Other peoples have sprung up and held their torch high for a time, but it burned out and they sit in twilight now or have vanished. The Jew saw them all, beat them all, and is now what he always was, exhibiting no decadence, no infirmities of age, no weakening of his parts, no slowing of his energies, no dulling of his alert and aggressive mind. All things are mortal but the Jew. All other forces pass, but he remains. What is the secret to his immortality?"
Well, that is interesting because the Bible talks about how to the Jews was given a promise. This promise was to Abraham that his seed would be, well, you wouldn't be able to count it. And I mean, not that it's infinite, but just that basically for a human person, if you started to try to count how many Jews have lived, you wouldn't do it. It's like the grains of sand on the beach. But what's interesting is that as a people, you think about it. I mean, God said He would bless and prosper this nation, and that and not only the Jew, but the father Abraham, the firstborn wasn't the Jewish child. It was actually Ishmael, born of a handmaiden servant, Hagar. And the point is,
the Bible says he will be like a wild beast.
Wild man, his hand will be against all nations, all people. I mean, just crazy guy. And it said God would bless him. So it's interesting historically, if you question the Bible, if you don't believe in creation or you don't believe that there is a God, here you've got this biblical passage here that you've got these two brothers in the family line, one which would later become the Arab nation, you know, where the Muslims are. And the other would be the Jewish nation, and that these would be two great nations on the planet, always would be. And to this day, with all the craziness you see in the headlines, you have Jews and Arabs fighting it out, you know, and trying to survive and still thriving. And you have all these other cultures who have come and gone, they faded, they don't have the impact. I mean, we're talking the whole world watching Saddam Hussein when he was launching Scud missiles. And today, even you read the headlines with the most powerful country in the world, you know, or the big three, you know, the United States and Donald Trump, you know, issued the order. It's like, Iran, you're on alert here. You know, like, we are watching you. We're not going to just watch quietly. We're going to step up here. This is like the whole world gets affected when, you know, countries like Iran have a nuke. And, you know, how can you account for this if there isn't a God, if there's not some divine plan or mystery at work? It's incredible.
I do agree with some of that. But I do think even though Iran is a threat, I think we have to still handle them a little gentler, because they've been under sanctions for so long that to piss them off might make them trigger something. We can get into that foreign policy later because it's being addressed this week in the news with further sanctions. But I did want to kind of lay off politics tonight, but we can talk about that. In Deuteronomy 4:27, it says, God will then scatter you Jews, he means, among the nations, and only a small number will remain among the nations where God shall lead you. Now, the person who wrote this article with that context says that in the same period of time in the last 2,000 years, the Chinese went from 30 million to 1 billion. There should be approximately 500 million Jews alive in the world today. The Chinese and the Indians are the third largest ethnic group on the planet. And the Jews only have 14 million people because of the persecution. I agree with you. I do think that the Muslim countries do have a hand against the Jews, obviously, because they see them as a threat to their own righteous inheritance, which Muhammad twisted around in the Quran. It was supposed to go to the Jews, not the Muslims, unfortunately.
Well, what's interesting is if you
God
step away from...
If people accept Christ, they can still receive the inheritance.
Right, but if you step away from the biblical, from the supernatural, from the God thing, you say we got two people here. We got, what, I don't know if you said 500 million, it's like half a billion people. And then you got someone else in the same proximity. I mean, we're talking rubbing shoulders. We were talking, you know, I don't know how big. I think Israel's like at some points 28 miles wide. I might be wrong, but it's not like California. I'll put it that way. I mean, it's just, you know, you could throw a baseball from one end to the other.
It's probably like New Jersey.
Right. So you've got this like 14 million people, or, you know, you could double it. You could say there's 20.
Well, they don't
all live
in Israel. 14 million is worldwide, too.
I understand, but I'm talking about as a nation.
Yes. I think John got cut off. Let me double check. Yeah, he'll be calling back. So I'm going to read something quick before he gets back on the air. Remember we were talking about the wheels? Well, the wheels in the Ezekiel 1 chapter. The dreadful height of the wheel in Ezekiel 1:18 indicates the gigantic, terrible energy of the complicated revolutions of God's providence, bringing about his purpose with unerring certainty. One wheel appeared traversely within another so that the movement might be without turning, whithersoever the living creatures might advance. Thus, each wheel was composed of two circles cutting one another at right angles, one only of which appeared to touch the ground upon the earth, according to the direction of the cherubim desired to move in. Now, today I see a lot of people... John called back. I just want to throw this comment out before he continues his discussion. A lot of people really don't know what direction they're going in, and they're only relying on current events, technology, headline news to decipher exactly what's going on in the world. Hi, John. Thanks for promptly calling back in.
Hello. So just to
follow
with
your
that
thoughts.
Last point is that just speaking of the nation of Israel as it stands, even if you double the population, say there's 50 million people, you're still talking being outnumbered 10 to 1, but I think really they outnumbered about 30 to 1. Just from a human reasoning point, you'd say these guys got no chance of survival. I mean, they are surrounded. Nations hate them, are conspiring to want to destroy them. And it's kind of an interesting thing that, yet if you look at the contributions in the education and the inventions and the awards, you know, in technology, in medicine, in all fields, you look at the Jewish population, it's astounding. It's amazing. It's overwhelming. And, you know, certainly our country.
I believe Albert Einstein was a Jew.
Yes, he was. And certainly if you go to New York City, you go to, or in L.A., I live in L.A., and you try to get a job in the legal field, or you deal with money, you deal with jewelry, you deal with real estate, anything of that nature that's business or money, you will find the handprints of Jewish culture all over the cookie jar.
Really?
Oh, yeah. There's always that joke when you you need an attorney, you know, make sure he's Jewish. And certainly that, and it applies. It's the reality. It's when you come here, if a person is unaware of that reality, when you come to L.A., you will find out very quickly. If you go into Beverly Hills, if you're going through certain parts of the city, you will see, you know, Jewish culture, and it's beautiful. It's amazing, but it's beyond logic. You can't just, or, you know, take movies, movie directors, you know, people involved in the biz, you'll just, or comedians, all that, you will find. In fact, the funny thing is, a lot of the people that are Jewish, especially in the older days, you wouldn't know it because they changed their name to more Americanized, titles, just so that they wouldn't be discriminated against. But, you know, the number of Jews that are known is incredible, but the number of Jews that are unknown is also incredible.
I agree, and I was just going to mention briefly that Albert Einstein was an Ashkenazi Jew, which was part of the transient Jews that were forced out of Central Europe in the original Holy Roman Empire, and they were moved into areas called the Pale of the Settlement, which was near Russia and Poland, Latvia and Lithuania, that were persecuted. But his parents were non-observant Jews, and Albert attended a Catholic elementary school from the age of 5 for 3 years, and then he transferred to a public school. So,
well, it is interesting
anyways,
that the culture, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next couple of decades, because the Jew that lives in America is not the same person that's been traditional or that has been, in from Israel or Orthodox. It's a different kind of a belief system. By that I mean they're very liberal and very almost anti-Jewish. You know, when you think about it, I mean, half the entertainers that are out there, they're marching and they're basically against, you know, kind of the immigration thing, and they're very vocal. But if you go to Israel, it can't be like that. They have a wall. They have a big wall. And you don't go into the country easily. They have people, you know, walking in the airports with military weaponry ready to go. You have grandmas that can lock and load. The whole culture is ready to fight and to survive. And you come to America, and it's different.
They have mandatory military service.
Yes.
You come
to Hollywood, and half the, you know, the Jewish people are marching around going, you know, let them in. And I'm not trying to say who's right or wrong.
How do you know they're Jews who are doing those protests?
Well, in the entertainment industry, you don't see any entertainers that are Jewish vocally against the current immigration ban. You know, in fact, I'm sure if I spent about just 20 minutes and looked up names, you know, you'd see who's who. But I mean, just in the whole culture of I'll just throw a name, like Jerry Seinfeld. I haven't seen him, you know, march out there and go, hey, we need to really clamp down on on militant
I think
Islam.
That part of the reason is because people in the last two decades, the last really traumatic event we went through in this country was Vietnam. And nobody's really, in America itself, besides blacks, have suffered real persecution. So they don't remember what it would be like to live under some specific persecution. And on the website that I was reading to you about Mark Twain, I found another interesting fact. It said, the term anti-Semitism, that's the only religious term that exists that identifies religious bigotry, xenophobia, or racism. In other words, if somebody says I'm anti-Semitic, I mean, you hear stuff like anti-Christian, but really that anti-Semitism is really the only actual dictionary word for religious bigotry. And then they characterize anti-Semitism as under the auspices of universality, intensity, longevity, and irrationality. So
by the way,
the younger Jewish people, you know, it's not just the Jews. A lot of younger kids are taught to embrace homosexuality, gender tolerance and preferences, and, you know, there's a lot of, I don't know if tolerance is the right word, but there's a lot of more acceptance for people aged 10 to 25 than the way we were brought up. Like, brought up, the gay movement wasn't even really formed officially.
Well, here's something for you. I mean, here's a couple things. I said that, you know, if you gave me 20 minutes to think about it, I would, you know, come up with some examples. It took me a minute. Bernie Sanders. Here you have, you know, a hotbed of politics. You're talking a major presidential candidate, a Jew, right? Remember, that was one of the kind of the sticking points against him, was like, hey, come out and say where you're at about you know, Jewish nation of Israel, about Islam and other things encountered to Jews. He could barely acknowledge it, and all he could do was kind of do a weak example of when he grew up, that there were people in his neighborhood that had numbers on them from the Holocaust, and he remembers those days, but he didn't really make a thing about it. He kind of sidestepped and avoided it. How come it wasn't politically correct? It wasn't going to further his advancement. And there actually, people were, you know, in the Jewish community were very critical that he wasn't stepping up. And like you were saying, these traditional values that have sustained the culture over the years, strong family unit, strong morality, just a basic faith in the homeland, you don't see that over here in America. And then that gets also processed because of our entertainment. It gets out there in the media, in our movies, in the TV shows, in the books and magazines. And if you step counter to any of those, kind of the popular, more liberal Hollywood ideology, you get crucified. You know, they'll bury you. And so it's very interesting, you know, kind of that they wanted the kind of the ideas to be accepting and tolerant. But if you're conservative, well, that's we have to give a pass on that. You can't speak your mind. You're going to get shut down.
Yeah. I was disappointed as a Christian. I was disappointed with Bernie Sanders myself, that he didn't more strongly identify his Jewish roots. But the fact of the matter is he shouldn't be different than what he really is. And I don't think he was that religiously affiliated with his synagogue and his practicing religion.
Right.
I think he was trying to do a mass appeal based on income inequity. And I think that he thought he would dilute his message if he even John F. Kennedy, who was a Catholic, didn't really, I saw a movie that I hadn't seen before when he went in front of these Texas Protestants. John F. Kennedy and gave a speech on his Catholicism because they feared his alliance to the Pope. He made such a convincing speech to them, like they ended up voting for him, all those Protestants. But I guess I don't think it's something that Bernie Sanders even considered. He was just
no,
trying
it wasn't
to
stick his lifestyle.
To a point message.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't his lifestyle or a pivotal point of how he lives his life, and also I'm sure politically, it just he didn't want to be labeled as the Jew candidate because well, no one Jewish has been president, and that was the aspiration or the goal or the intention. So, you know, you kind of have to until you become the first one to do it. It can be the kiss of death for a lot of candidates. So. Yeah, he had to play his card a certain way.
It would have been an
so
interesting dichotomy had he become the president, though. I don't know how the Arab world would have felt about it. They probably would not have liked it, unfortunately.
Well, kind of going to the
yeah,
kind of going to the Iran issue. I'll give you an example. Jimmy Carter, nice guy, very nice to Iran. He was cool. They kind of ignored him. Reagan came in tough, and they bent to that. You kind of look historically, you know, whether it's been through the years with the history of Islam, it's never been – it doesn't matter if you ignore it or if you're nice to the culture or not. It's an aggressive tradition and an aggressive culture that will move forward no matter what. You have to either you're going to be aggressive and fight it, or you can be kind of middle of the road and hope and pray, but it doesn't make it go away, unfortunately. It just
well, up until the late 70s, Iran was controlled by a Western-built secular Shah, and not until the religious movement came with the Khomeini, did it become more militant? And places
right.
like Jordan and other places were not. Jordan has a lot more tolerance religious-wise, and so does Tunisia, than places like Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Omar, and those places. So it just depends on which government you're dealing with. Like the Saudis have been able to rise above their religious conviction to conduct moderate foreign relation policies. Even when they don't treat their own citizens well, they treat other countries well.
Yes,
well,
can we shift
gears for a minute and do something a little lighter? Because we only have 15 minutes left of the show.
Go for it.
I want you to see if you recognize this voice. It's a 14-second clip.
Great idea. Why don't we switch jobs? You take over me, this is such an expert at Brady. I take over your job. Then people can finally... Okay.
That was Arnold Schwarzenegger criticizing Donald Trump because Donald Trump criticized Schwarzenegger at the National Prayer Breakfast today, saying that he's ruining the ratings on the Apprentice show.
Donald has a very interesting strategies, and I was talking to my adopted brother Slick today. You know, it's going to take people a while to unless they either assassinate him or unless they impeach him very quickly. I mean, we're talking like do it in a week, because if you try to impeach him, it's going to take months. You're going to have to put together a group and a committee and hearings and investigations, and it's going to go back and forth, and you got a controlling Republican Congress that's going to make it slow and painful. But basically what he does, most people, if you punch them politically, they stand back and go, oh, they try to defend themselves. They try to go, well, I didn't do this, I didn't do that. And, or they try to come up with just an argument against it. Trump just goes on the offensive. He just starts going in other areas. It's like, oh, I've got a new Supreme Court judge. Oh, Tesla is my new, this guy's on my board of energy. Oh, blah, blah. He just jumps right into a new thing. I got a new business deal for blah, blah, blah. And then I'm going to the wall, and then people start getting mad about the wall, and then he jumps over to another thing. And by the time the smoke clears, you're like wondering, like, which argument do I fight? Which battle do I – you get worn out.
But someone told me the news predicted on NPR that he threw that Supreme Court thing in there because that Muslim ban, that travel ban backfired. So he wanted to take the attention off of that.
He's very smart with that because you deflect, attention, and you move it to another area, and you score some points here or there. Muhammad Ali had a very great strategy. When he would box, he would he did what we call rope-a-dope. He'd let the other opponent punch themselves out, and then the last 20 seconds or 30 seconds of the round, he would start firing off, and the other person is worn out. And he gave the impression by the time the round ended, you were thinking he won the round, even if the other guy threw more punches and hit more times, because Ali closed strong. And, Trump is kind of like that. He just keeps going here and there, and you're like, by the time you're done, he gets the last word. Like, okay, now he's jumping on Schwarzenegger, and deflecting some of that, and then because, he had higher ratings than Schwarzenegger. But Schwarzenegger is current. It's a current show. It's something that people are watching. The point is, Donald's always in the news. He's not sitting back just being the victim. He's on the offensive. And you've got to be able to.
That's one thing that disgruntles me is that why doesn't he take about 2 weeks, learn some of, for example, the UN made a resolution today that complained about the Ukraine and Russians' actions in there. He should take 2 weeks and just get multiple briefings on situations that have occurred in these hot spots around the world for the last 5 to 20 years and educate himself before trying to make a move. That's what I would suggest.
That's one strategy. There's a learning curve. He's been on the job 1 week. He's already done more in 1 week than, one thing about
I think
his,
it's been more like 12 days.
We're getting into the second week. But, to tell you the truth, I can, when you talk about Obama, I think of like maybe three things. Obamacare, and that, how long did that take? That was like, 3 or 4 years?
It took 4 months.
Yeah, it's like.
He took office in 2008, and it was voted on in the spring of 2009. Well, actually, they got it underway in 2009, and it was voted on the spring of 2010, so it took 14 months from start to finish.
But I'm speaking from experience. I didn't get Obamacare until, not Obamacare, but the mandatory, when it came into effect, where people had to get insurance. Remember the first 2 or 3 years, there was a problem. People couldn't sign up.
2014.
I believe
was mandatory. Well, it went through in 2010, but some states were slower than others. And I think 2013 was the first year you were going to get punished on your taxes, or 2014.
Right. That was 5 years, and even you're saying 2010. That was 2 years. We're talking, we're not even second week, and Trump's fired off, 5 or 6 things. With Obama, it's just like, we're going to try to do this, and then we got a problem, and we got the computers, and even as long as it took, it was still like, we're not prepared for this. Remember all the problems they had registering people and making it smooth, and people, even to this day, people are still. I'm in my second year of kind of this mandatory got to have insurance thing. There's bugs in it. It's gotten better. But the point is, it's kind of hard.
Do you still pay a monthly premium?
No, I'm a Medi-Cal or Medicare, Medi-Cal, whatever it is. So
pay a monthly premium.
I don't. But here's the thing. There was in the process, I was in between coverage because my status changed financially, so that made them bump me out. And then My status changed again, and then they pushed me in. So there was about 3 months I was without insurance because I was appealing it. I was going through process. And the point is, in those 3 months, they're going to penalize me. Like, you don't have insurance. It's like, this is America. Like, you're telling me I have to? You're forcing me to have insurance? Is this in the Constitution? You must have insurance or you will be penalized by the government. It's like, what is that? Is that freedom? Is that like?
But then you went through the process and then you didn't have it for a while, right?
Right, all that, and then I didn't have insurance anyway, and then I had to fight tooth and nail to get it back, and then when I did, it's like, now we're gonna, you know, review and see if we can penalize you for not having insurance. It's like, it's kind of like, you know, the homeless guy that lives in his car, and it's like, you can't live in your car. It's like, you want people in the street? It's like, this is America. The people are in a car just on public property, public land, trying to survive, and like, we're going to go after them. Like, that's the person we want to harass. It's just,
I heard something bizarre the other day. Hugo, which is like a community of 10,000 people, my friend Patty lives there. White Bear Lake is a city of 23,000. Hugo's just north of there. And they won't let people park on the street at night after midnight. So
oh,
you
no.
can't even park in the suburbs on your own street after midnight. You have to park in the driveway.
That's crazy. Or like in L.A., again, you can't go in a neighborhood and park your car in the city limits. This, I mean, we're talking the largest city, you know, second largest city in the nation. And it's like, where did all this ruling come about? What's, where's the love? You know, where's this? And this is in a liberal town. It's in an immigrant friendly, homeless friendly environment. I hate to see what it's like outside of, you know, California.
Well,
crazy.
Like when I lived in East Hollywood, if you lived in that neighborhood, you could park on the street. Like over by Melrose and La Brea, you have to have a number, like a permit, like a little thing on your car, you know, to designate that you live in that area. And then you can park there at night on the street.
Well, I just think it's nobody's business, you know. It's like it's your car, you own it. It's public land. You know, I don't care if the city owns it. It's the people's land. It's not like LA spent money to buy the land. You know, it's like, it's just eminent domain. They, you know, they kind of own it by just because they say they own it, you know, but I mean, it's public land, you know. It's like they're trying to force people on just control. It's for money. It's just to register everyone, make everyone pay. And that's what, you know, the healthcare thing, it wasn't to give people healthcare. It's a money grab. It's to make everyone pay. You know, cause you had a lot of people that they didn't have insurance and they couldn't afford it. And now it's like, we got to make sure you have to have it. And you have to pay for it. So I don't know. I don't think it's.
Yeah, I'm a proponent of revising Obamacare. I pay a lot more now than I did before.
Well, you know, that's your prerogative. But again, why am I required? Why is it a law I have to have health insurance?
Well, we could go into that whole thing of private sector. I guess it would be classified as a need, but is it a private need or a public need, and is it publicly serviced or privately serviced? Like, if you were disabled mentally or physically, you would be on the government dole anyway. So are you getting a better guarantee being on Medi-Cal?
But, well, let's just say I don't want to have any health insurance. Why am I forced to? And not only that, like, we're looking short term. Let's think bigger. Let's think China, right? I want to have two babies. No, you have one. How come? Because the government thinks you should only have one because we have too many people. So, and we need males. We don't want girls either. You know, you start running into, and then they tell you, well, you should be on this med. Your blood pressure is too high, and this and that is too, you know, aren't in acceptable government levels. You're going to cost us money down the line for your health care. So you have to, it's like a prisoner. You know, when you're in prison, they make you take certain medications, certain drugs, and you don't have a choice. So that's the problem I see in the future. It's like, what happens when they start telling you, you know, and we don't like your Christianity, because that's a little bit, it's racist, because transgenders have rights, and you're a racist because you don't accept that or you don't practice it.
I don't think racist is the right term. I would say prejudice of some sort.
Prejudice, you know, well, definitely, again, it kind of gets into, you know, splitting hairs, but basically they're going to say that you discriminate and that you're a hater and that you're, and it goes into Hitler. Hitler did this, Hitler killed people. It always does, right? How many times have people called Donald Trump Hitler? Like, really? Is he rounding up people and gassing them? It's like, no.
I think he's going to find out that trying to do too much too fast is going to backfire. That he's not going to be able to go at the speed he wants with the way our government works.
It'll be interesting because he's using methods that no one uses, and or at least we haven't seen in a long time. Oh, I can't remember any time. So it'll be interesting to see. I could criticize his technique, but he's president of the United States. It got him this far. So that's the problem. If you try to say don't do this or don't do that, if he had listened to you and me and everyone else, he would never have made it. He doesn't listen to what people tell him to do. He sets the bar. So I don't know. The alpha dog is doing his. Who knows? You know,
but
I mean,
the fact
like
of the matter is just being confident may not be enough. Do you think eventually he will shut the media? He'll try to shut the media down on some level, because
he
can't go around putting out fire. He can't go around putting out fires everywhere every time someone disagrees with them.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Slick, my brother, was saying, you know, he's just going to wear it. Now, Slick is very pro-Trump. Yeah, I mean, he's like ultra-Trump, and well, at least he's been kind of.
You said that once, but then he told me he was going to vote for Jill Stein.
Oh, that's true, but what I'm saying is that as far as philosophically, he likes what he's doing. But the point of what I'm saying is he said, well, I think he's just going to wear himself out, and he's just going to get tired, he's going to quit. I said, quit? Are you kidding? This is what he does. This is him. He can't turn it off. This is how he rolls, and this is why people voted for him, and he's going to ride this out. He may tone it down, and you see this behavior. He'll apologize for something, or he'll make a couple calls and go, okay, we patched it up. The other person may not think it's patched up, but he's going to do his political spin on it, and it's how he rolls, you know. It's definitely something we haven't seen before, and I don't know. I'm not a kid, so I'm not that worried about the future. But I'm very curious to see how this all works out, because it's definitely challenging. It's definitely going to get results. I mean, he's going for the idea of getting results, and a lot of people don't have that ideology. They're just doing rhetoric, you know.
I agree. I don't want to speculate yet, because it's just too hard to tell at this point. I just don't want to go into a third world war.
It's possible. I think either way we've had wars, and it just it doesn't. I think the people that he let's see, who are we going to go to war with? China. He's, you know, that's one of his biggest customers. You know, Russia.
Did you know that we owe China like $1.24 billion? And they actually are renting space right now in the Trump Hotel, two blocks from his house. They have permanent space in his hotel that they're renting.
Right. And then kind of going backwards, do you think Donald Trump, I'm just asking subjectively, do you think he wants his son to die? I think he wants Ivanka, her husband, and the baby. Do you think that's his intention? I want to make sure they get blown up in a World War III. You know, he wants
them
to
live. No, I
don't
think that. I just think that with his brash attitude and how he practically hung up on the Australian Prime Minister, that he has to – I just wish that someone would give him a mini lesson in foreign diplomacy and dealing with other people, not just looking at it from a black and white perspective. Like the 1,200 refugees that Obama approved to already come here from Australia, and Trump said it was a bad idea, but he didn't even really know anything about the refugees. Stuff like that.
Well, I mean,
off.
I guess the question would be, would you, if I said, Jane, I have some homeless people, and I'm bringing them over to your house, and I thought it'd be a cool idea because you have some extra room there. Lolo's not there. And I think, you might, in Christian love, say, that's great, but I think your first thought would be, like, are they able to get jobs? Are they nice people? Are they because here's the thing, you bring in a stranger and they don't have, job skills, or they're not able to integrate, they're going to be not only on government support or trying to, the kids are going to get angry and upset and get into crime or something. They're going to have to support themselves somehow. And there's going to be an issue.
Actually, they were from like 12 different countries, and a lot of them came over on a boat. There were Indians, there were Somalians, there were Middle Easterners that somehow ended up there in Australia, but the Australian government refused to take them, which I think is pretty rude. Like, why do they expect us to take them?
Well, again, right, man, and kind of going back again to that point, like, you you would say, like, why are they coming to my house? It's like, I don't know them. I'm not saying you can't. I'm just saying it's a recipe for
turns out, Trump didn't make an open and shut decision. He's thinking about it.
That's because people are blowing up about it. And I understand we want to be a compassionate country, but it's not like when America was first founded, there wasn't terrorism. We were just, everyone wanted to come to America, they wanted a new start. This wasn't like people are coming over here to want to bomb and blow us up. So, yeah, you have to be more. And again, this is an open land to be discovered. It's like we're kind of maxed out in some areas. In the spaces you want to go, you're going to have to create a whole, like you want to go out in the middle between here and Nevada. Okay, well, you got to, build a house and get zoning and get electricity and water and all this stuff. You can't just like. The places that are already here, it's settled. People are trying to get jobs, and there isn't a job market. It's a bad situation. So
yeah, I think America's pretty much imploded. But it would be nice if people were English speaking too. It's hard to train people from scratch.
I mean, what's wrong with saying let's wait 3 months and check things out? Let's be careful about who we bring in. He didn't say you can't come to America.
There's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying that sometimes the news inflates things, too. I guess the Australian president said that Trump did not hang up on him. It was just an intense conversation. But with that, it's 2 o'clock in Minnesota, and I want to go to bed.
Yes.
So I'm going to play that someone you read.
That way you can get ready for the immigrants who are going to send to your house, so you can prepare your house and get it ready, right?
As long as the government subsidizes me half my rent, I'll take them.
So the government is me and you paying for it. So, you kind of goes into that angle. You would go, I need a couple of weeks or a month or two to kind of plan it and figure this out, right? You would go like, I want them over tomorrow. I don't know these people, right? Did you not place ads for people to come in and you ask them, you wanted to know, do they have a job, right? What's their work history? Do they have references? And were there people that wanted to come in? You meant like, hell no, right? This person, no, they have red flags, right? This is all Trump is doing.
I'll send them to your house.
Exactly, he's vetting. You vet people. You just let people in. Well, they, you know, he needs a place to stay.
I put my ad down for a roommate. There was nobody suitable.
Right. And just think about it. These are Americans. These are people who have lived here, right, in the country. And you looked at them and you vetted them. You said, this person I don't want in my house. They're trouble. They're you know, got a black eye, they've been in a fight, doesn't have a car, got an excuse, don't have the money, you know, money will be here in a check next week or whatever. You're going, I see nothing but problems here. So you said, I'm not letting them in, right? You pulled the Trump. That's exactly what he did. He's like, hold a second, let's wait.
I didn't let the prodigal son in my house.
Right. And all he's saying is, well, let's wait 3 months here. Let's scan this. Let's put together a pro. Let's figure this out. And people are going, you know, we can't do that. You know, it's, you know, when they make all these speeches. And it's like, okay, Julia Louise Dreyfus, it's like, let him in at your house, your mansion, right? And you drive your car. She's not going to do that. You know, all these celebrities, open up your house and have them come to your place. Well, then
I
say,
in northern Minnesota, not in Southern California. So with that, I'm going to let myself off the hook, and I'm going to play someone you recall.
Wow.
Someone who returned to the show as a sheep in the fold.
So
what's your final comment?
My final comment is that God has everything under control, as crazy as it may seem. And if you're ever in doubt, just open the newspapers and open the Bible and look at Israel, and it will be very evident to you that there's divine hand at play. And it's a mystery. It's not that simple. It is a mystery, but yet it is a divine mystery. And the answer is there. Check that out. It's in the Bible.
My final comment is, I like the Mark Twain quote. He recognized that Israel had survived many diasporas and being pushed all over around the world. And I think that the problems that existed 50 years ago are pretty much the same today. It's just that a couple shifts in the population and some technological advancements, but the same problems have existed for a long time. Now, they did mention on the news that there's been seven decades of European-U.S. diplomacy, and that might change, so we'll see how that shakes up in the next 6 months. Needless to say, I did burn out my candle, and I'm going to play John's song. Thank you for listening, anybody who's out there who didn't call in specifically. We had 310 listens in the last week. Go to this song, and thank you for joining us, John. Good night.
Good night, Jane.
Good night. Good night, everybody. Ciao, ciao.